hoping that the microphone's working. Yeah, can everyone hear me through the speakers? If you don't have access to a Bible, I very much encourage you to grab one. I don't know if Steve, could you go and grab just a couple, and just if there's anyone in the room that doesn't have it, obviously you can access it on your phone, whatever you find easiest. But we are going to be jumping around quite a bit, and so I don't think we'll have the verses up on the screen because we are jumping around so much. So yeah, Steve's just come out, so please do stick your hand up and grab a Bible. I always find it really helpful as well, rather than just hearing it, because I will be reading sections. I find it really helpful to actually see it and be able to continue referring to it as the person talks, and draw back to those verses. So as we have been going through this series on Joseph, I don't know if you've been like me, I've been really encouraged by it. It's been inspiring, it's been interesting, it's been challenging, there's no doubt about it. And today is the last talk in the series focusing on Joseph. One of the things that I thought beforehand was I kind of put Joseph in the kids' church, Sunday school kind of pile. It was very much like, great story, you know, this is fantastic, the multicolored coat, all that kind of stuff. It's really visual, kids love it, brilliant. But actually, as we've really dug into it, I really feel that we've pulled out some really deep truths that everyone can learn from, both children and adults. So let's remind ourselves where we're up to in the story of Joseph. Last week, Dave was talking about forgiveness, and he brought us up to the part where Joseph's brothers realized who Joseph really was, that Joseph had been concealing who he was, and he was obviously in Egypt, and his brothers came to ask for food because they were feeling the effects of the famine. And Dave very powerfully and very challenging explained the need for us to forgive people who do things to us. But I thought the aspect that really stuck out to me was how we also need to be able to receive forgiveness. And actually, sometimes, as hard as it is to forgive other people, are we able to accept that forgiveness for ourselves as well, and how that can affect us if we don't accept that forgiveness. And so, of course, Joseph's brothers then go back to their home, to where their father was staying, and they tell him that Joseph's alive, and that Joseph had asked for his dad and all his family to come to Egypt because the famine was going to continue. And so that's where we're up to in the story, the overall story of Joseph. This week's talk, the title is Joseph's Story in the Context of Israel's Journey. So what I'm hoping is, by the end of this talk, is that we'll be able to see the context of Joseph's story. What happened before Joseph's story, what happened after, how Joseph's story fits into the wider plan that God has. So to understand that, we're going to look at what happened before, what happened after, and then we're going to step back even further and take a view of the really big picture. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about family trees, lineage, bloodlines, lots of different descriptions of our past history, of the people that went before us, our parents, our grandparents, our great-great-grandparents. And it brought me to the program, Who Do You Think You Are? Has everyone either seen that program or heard about it? Perhaps, okay, some people, maybe not all. So the idea is that generally it's a celebrity or some well-known person from the UK, and I say from the UK, that's living in the UK, and they take a deep dive into their past family history and family tree, and try and find some really interesting aspects. So I googled what was the most memorable Who Do You Think You Are episodes, And the one that stuck out to me, I don't know if anyone saw this one, was the Boris Johnson one. This was before he was Prime Minister. It was way before he was, I think at the time he was Mayor of London. And again, if you've heard Boris Johnson speak, I think on the next slide we'll see a photo of him. Boris was very much, very well spoken, and I guess a lot of people weren't that surprised, given his background and his education and the wealth in the family, that he was very much linked in to some interesting characters, which included King George II. And so as a result of that, he was actually related to Queen Elizabeth, which I think he was very thrilled about, because Boris was a big royal fan. And to find out that he was linked in to Queen Elizabeth, I think probably made his year, if not his whole life. Another story that came up that was quite interesting was Ainsley Harriott's story. Again, TV chef, you may have seen him in various different roles. His family, he knew, came from Jamaica. And he'd assumed that he was descendants of slaves, that there's a lot of slavery within Jamaica, and he assumed that he descended from slaves, which he did to an extent, and part of his family were slaves. But what shocked him the most was that his name, Harriet, so Ainsley Harriet, actually came from a slave owner. So his two times great-grandfather was a white slave owner, and he had no idea about this. And obviously that'd be quite shocking to find that out. My final example, I have to say I've not seen this final one, which is of Matthew, how do you say his second name? Pinsent. Sir Matthew Pinsent, who is Olympic rower. I've not seen this one, but I'm certainly going to look it up and watch it when I get back. Is that they found out that he was a descendant of Edward I. But not only that, they found a piece of evidence, an ancient scroll that showed that Edward I, this Norman king, actually descended from Adam and Eve. So there was this ancient scroll that showed a direct link between this king and therefore Sir Matthew Pinsent with Adam and Eve, and therefore a relative of Jesus and a relative of King David. Now, of course, when I told Steve this, he was like, well, it's obvious, isn't it? Aren't we all descendants of Adam and Eve? Yes, we are. We know that. However, for that to have been communicated on a BBC programme, and for them to have this ancient scroll that links this person to Adam and Eve, I think is fascinating. I think it's interesting, particularly in our culture, that I don't know a lot about my family history. I don't know if you do, if you have maybe looked into it, looked into records. My perspective is that we don't actually potentially value or think much of our heritage or the like great-great-great-grandparents and who they were and what they did. And yet I think from that TV programme, it shows that it affects how they view themselves. As they learn about their heritage, as they learn about the people that they came from, it changes the view of how they view themselves. And they get very emotionally linked into these people that previously they didn't even know existed. And yet, when they hear about their stories, and because of that link to themselves, they become very, very emotionally attached through that story. So now let's move on to Joseph's family line. Joseph's father, obviously, is Jacob. We've heard a lot through the series about Jacob and what's happened. And also Joseph is the son of Rachel, because Jacob had two wives, Leah and Rachel. And so Joseph is the son of Rachel. Jacob's parents, so if we go back another generation, Jacob's parents were Isaac and Rebekah, and Isaac being the child that God had tested Abraham by saying to Abraham, I've given you this boy, but I want you to go and sacrifice him. And God was testing whether Abraham would sacrifice his one and only child because God had told him to do that. So that's the Isaac that we're referring to, and Isaac is Jacob's father. So, and then step one back more, the father of Isaac is of course Abraham, like we're saying that Abraham and Sarah struggled to have a child. God had promised to them that that he would turn them into a great nation, and Abraham was just like, how are you going to do this, God? I haven't even got any children. And so we can see the four generations that go before Joseph. So you've got Joseph, Joseph's father is Jacob, Jacob's father is Isaac, and then Isaac's father is Abraham. Now it's important to understand that backdrop passage to understand the importance of what we're just going to read. So if we all turn to Genesis chapter 46, which is where we had got to in the Joseph story. And it says, so Israel set out, so Israel is the other name for Jacob. So Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifice to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Here I am, he replied. I am God, the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again, and Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. So we're reading here that God is telling Jacob, yes, you know, do go down to Egypt, because Jacob has left where he was. He's gone to Beersheba, so he's travelled quite a distance already to go to Beersheba. And I wonder if he suddenly thought, hang on a minute. Yes, of course I want to go and see my son Joseph, who I thought was dead. Yes, I want to escape this famine. But actually, have I heard God's voice on this? Am I just doing this because it's what I want to do? Or is it actually God is calling me into this place? And so we see that Jacob does this sacrifice and seeks God's wisdom and his guidance and gets a very clear, yes, go to Egypt, I will be with you and I will bring you back. We can see there in some of the words that God says to Jacob, he says, he relates to the God of your father. So again, very much putting him into the lineage of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. He's saying, I will make you into a great nation. And that very much, again, kind of repeats what we've heard before and the promise, the covenant of God between God and Abraham. So I thought it would be good to just have a look at and remind ourselves of the promises that had gone on before Joseph's story, before Joseph's time. So if we turn to Genesis 12, 1-3. This is where we start flicking around, so hold on to your seats. Genesis 12, 1-3. So this is God speaking to Abraham. The Lord had said to Abraham, well, I said to Abram, but again, his name changed. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So we can see a lot of the promises that God makes there to Abraham come through in that in the promise that he also gives to Jacob very many years later. We're now going to skip to Genesis 17, verses 3-8. And again, this is God speaking to Abraham. So it says, Abraham fell face down, and God said to him, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant, an everlasting covenant, between me and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. We see that this covenant, as it says there, God promises, it's not just a covenant for Abraham, it's a covenant for his descendants. So we can see this now flowing through to Isaac, who's Abraham's son. So if we turn over to Genesis 26. Genesis 26, and this is verse 1 to 5. It says, now there was a famine in the land, which is interesting, isn't it? It seems to be quite a few famines. And also it refers to, it says, besides the previous famine in Abraham's time. So at the moment we're looking at Isaac. Abraham has kind of got older and he's passed away. And there's a famine in the land. And the Lord appeared to Isaac and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land where I tell you to live. Stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. So God very much is making it clear that what he had promised Abraham was flowing through into the line of Isaac. We see that again in the next one, is chapter 26, but this time it's verse 23. And interesting, this is at Beersheba, the same place where we're now at with Jacob. And God speaks to Jacob in Beersheba. This is his father, Isaac. And what happens again, that same location. So Isaac has moved to Beersheba. He says, from there he went up to Beersheba. That night the Lord appeared to him, to Isaac, and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. It says, Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. So then that brings us to the next generation, which is Jacob. And as we said, there's the part in chapter 46 that we've already read, it's Beersheba. But even before that, if we turn to Genesis 28, verses 13, is the first time God speaks to Jacob about this covenant passing through his line. So, yeah, chapter 28, 13 to 15. So this is God speaking to Jacob. I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. So as we kind of put Joseph's story in the context of all that history, all those promises over generations, once again we're brought back to the undeniable faithfulness of God. Again and again, as we've looked at the story of Joseph, we've seen how God had a plan in the darkest places, when he was in the dungeon, when he was sold by his brothers, when he was accused of sleeping with his employer's wife, all those situations. Joseph trusted God because he knew God was faithful. And again, we just see that as we step back and look what happened before Joseph and his the line before him, the four generations, you can see God's faithfulness. When he says something, he will do it. He will bring it to fruition. Each one of them, so Abraham saw it to an extent. He saw his son being born when he was old. He saw that line continue. Isaac saw it to another extent as things started to grow and he was prospering. And kings were scared of him and said, please can you move out of this place, Isaac, because you're getting too big and too powerful. Can we have a peace-sharing agreement where we agree not to attack you and you agree not to attack us? Because he was prospering. And the same with Jacob, that his family grows and he's very successful, and God is clearly with him. So we've seen what's happened before Joseph's the story of Joseph. So now let's look briefly at what happens after the end of Joseph. And we probably shouldn't be that surprised about what happens, but let's just take a quick sneak peek. Exodus 1, verse 6. And it says, "Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. 'Look,' he said to his people, 'the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even numerous. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country.'" So we can see that although Joseph's story ends very positively, he's reunited with his family, he saves not only Egypt and not only the people from surrounding areas, but people from across the world came to Egypt because the famine was so severe. However, as we can see here, that's not where the story ends. I thought it was interesting, something I hadn't realised, if we flick back to Genesis 15, verse 12, God actually tells Abraham that this will happen. So again, perhaps that message got communicated down the line. Maybe the Israelites who were in Egypt at this time of oppression, maybe they knew about this prophecy. I'm not sure. So Genesis 15, 12 to 14, it says, "As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, 'Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and ill-treated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions.'" So again, when we step back and we look at very, very difficult times, very horrendous times that Israel were experiencing in Egypt, God has a plan. This is not a surprise to God. Maybe it wasn't a massive surprise to them if that prophecy had been fed down through the families. But God certainly had not left them, that he had a plan and he would bring it into fruition. Yeah, and of course, one of the things of that was the persecution of the Israelites meant that they, again, the story of Moses and asking for them to be let go and to go to the land that God had promised them. So if we step back from Israel's story even further from what happened immediately, generations after Joseph, we can see how Israel is used to bless not just Israel, but all the nations, which again was very much part of the prophecy, part of the covenant between Abraham and God. And that was that Israel would be a blessing to all nations through Jesus. And so it's great to see, again, if we look really big picture, and I'm not going to read the whole Bible because we'd be here for a few weeks. It's really great to see that God uses Joseph and the situation and the generations after him to bring the Messiah through that line. The thing that I think is quite interesting, again, having read through the story of Joseph and how faithful Joseph was, actually, he doesn't seem to like say, "God, where are you? What is happening? Why am I in this dungeon?" He doesn't seem to be doing that, and I wouldn't criticise anyone who did, quite frankly, because of the things that he faced when he hadn't done much wrong. But God doesn't continue the... Jesus doesn't descend from Joseph and Joseph's family. So of course all Jacob's sons become the nations of Israel, and the line doesn't pass through Joseph, it actually passes through Judah. Now I don't remember if we skip back quite a few weeks to the beginning of this series, Judah was the son, so Jacob's brother, Judah was the son that had said, "Let's not kill him. Let's sell him. Like, we won't leave him in this pit. let's sell him, we'll make some money out of this, he's really annoying, we don't want him, but we might as well make something out of it while we're doing it anyway. Like, this is a fairly dark character, you would think, that was willing to profit off the sale of his own half-brother, knowing that his dad loves Joseph so much, and presumably aware of the pain that that would be to his father, and yet he is the one that came up with this idea of selling Joseph. And you think, God, why did you do that? Why did you choose to bring your son through that family line? Why wouldn't you bring it through Joseph, who was so faithful, who did so much and didn't question and trusted you throughout? And I think it shows part of the redemptive nature of our God. When we maybe look at our own lives, no doubt there'll be some things that we're not so proud of, things that we've not done that we wish we hadn't done, or things we should have done that we didn't do. But I think it's really interesting that God chooses Judah to continue his line as a story of redemption. That God doesn't just say, right, you're knocked off, you're a bad character, that's it, I'm cutting your line off and I'm going to forget about you, I'm going to focus on the good guy, Joseph, and I'll bring my son through his family line. He doesn't do that at all. I think there's a lot that goes on that we don't read in the Bible with Judah. I can only imagine that Judah probably at some point thought, what have we done? We've sold our brother, we don't know where he is, who knows what experiences he's having, my father's distraught. And the reason why I think that is because he is the one, Judah is the one that steps up when they think Benjamin is going to be kept as a servant in Pharaoh's household for stealing that silver cup. Because Joseph plants the silver cup in Benjamin's sack, and then they pursue him, and they find it, and they say, okay, all the other brothers, you can go. You can go back to your father, but Benjamin needs to stay. And it's Judah that steps up and says, no, please don't. My father will just, you know, it'll be the end of him. Take me instead. I will be your servant. Let Benjamin go. And to all intents and purposes, he didn't know that that Benjamin didn't steal the silver cup. He might have easily said, well, that was pretty stupid. Well, you know, you take the punishment for what you've done and you can be the servant. But he doesn't. He steps up and he says, please don't. Take me instead. And I think it's just amazing that change that God brings about in Judah's life. And I think, again, we can see throughout, again, God's story and God's plan, that plan of redemption, of taking mess, taking broken people and bringing about his purposes through them. We're coming into land. One of the things that I've really struggled with as I've kind of contemplated and thought about this part of the story, and particularly looking at the covenant, the agreement between Abraham and God, is obviously we can't ignore what is happening at the moment in the Middle East. Now, I'm sure none of you have failed to see the news, to see what is happening and the destruction and the horror and the fighting and the lack of peace that is in the Middle East. And it's devastating, and I can only imagine that it's devastating to God as well, to see the hate, to see the death, to see the destruction on all sides. I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of how different Christians perceive what should happen or what will happen in the Middle East. But I think I certainly have been challenged through reading the promises that God made, and the words that are used has really challenged me to think, what do I think? What do I believe? As I say, there's Christians that have a variety of perspectives about the land and who it belongs to and where people should live, etc., etc. But what I keep coming back to is that God promised that Israel would be a blessing to all nations. And yes, that is through Jesus. But I think that it's wider than that as well. And from, as I say, we're not necessarily seeing that at the moment, and it breaks my heart. So I don't have a particular view on it, and there's lots of scholars out there who've spent their lifetime looking into this. But I would encourage us all to not stick our head in the ground. As Christians, we know that we're called to be a light in this world. And by sticking our head in the ground and not grappling with these really challenging situations, I don't think we're being that light. And so I'm very much going to spend more time looking into this and praying into it as well, because I believe that's what we should do, is not turn away, but we need to grapple with these difficult passages and what it means for today. And to pray, I think, ultimately for peace, because I think that's God's ultimate goal, isn't it? It's God's people in God's kingdom, and there'll be no more tears, there'll be no more sadness. And so I will be praying for peace. So, having said all of that, coming back to the passage, Genesis 46, that we have been reading, actually it's 47. Jacob feels that his time is coming to an end, and he gets Joseph to promise that he will take his body back, as God had promised to Jacob, and that he will be returned back to the land that had been promised to him and to Israel. And so Joseph agrees to that and says, "I will do as you say." And then Jacob, on verse 31, so this is chapter 47, verse 31, it says that Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years, and the years of his life were 147. And it says, and previous to that, actually, when he speaks to Pharaoh, when he meets Pharaoh for the first time, when he comes to Egypt, he describes his life as few and, what was it? Few and... The years of my pilgrimage are 130 when he met Pharaoh. My years have been few and difficult, and they do not equal the years of the pilgrimage of my father. And I thought that was interesting that that's how he described his life, that his years were few and full of difficulty. And when we come later to his time of actual passing, chapter 47, verse 31, Jacob says, "Swear to me," he said, "that he would take his body back to the land that had been promised." And he said, "Then Joseph swore to him, and Israel worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff." And it just really, that image really stuck with me, that everything that had happened to Jacob, all the challenges, being deceived by his father-in-law and marrying a woman that he didn't think that he was marrying, the strife within his family and the children, losing, he saw one of his children died, losing his wife, all those difficulties, this image of this old man with his son reunited with Joseph, Joseph agreeing that he would fulfill the promise that God had given to him, that he would return to the promised land. And what does Jacob do? He worships. He leans on top of his staff and he worships. I just think it's such a powerful image. And again, as we've already heard today about from Steve about last week and the difficulties that we face, and yet we choose to worship. And I think, yeah, just that image of this old man that has seen so much, that has borne so much and been through so much, yet knows God's faithfulness, yet knows God's blessing and trusts him for the future. And so he chooses at the very end of his life to lean on his staff, because it's almost like he can't even stand up, can't even prop himself off. He leans on his staff and he worships God. I just think it's, again, a challenge to us all, and many of us, well, all of us do it, don't we? We all choose to worship in the hard times and the good. So let's close in prayer. Thank you, Lord, for the series that we've been working through and learning so much from the life of Joseph. Thank you, Lord, for his faithfulness, but also for your faithfulness, your faithfulness to Joseph, but your faithfulness to Israel as well, to the covenants, the promises that you made. And because of those promises that you made and you saw through, that we can trust that promises that you make to us stand firm as well. That we can trust in you in the highs and the lows. We might not choose a lot of the things, as I'm sure Joseph wouldn't, or Israel wouldn't have chosen a lot of the hardships that they faced. Yet we know that you are faithful. Pray, Lord, that we would be shining lights, that in our communities, with our friends, with our families, that we wouldn't feel the need to have it all together. That doesn't separate us from everyone else. What separates us from everyone else is that we worship you through those challenges, that we recognize you, we trust you, we have that foundation in you, that we can be real with you, but we know that, yeah, that through everything you will work together for good, that you have your wider plan, and we submit to that, Lord God. And we ask, Lord, that you would give us the strength and the energy that we need to play our part, as we've seen the story and how that fits in the wider story of your salvation. We know it's not over, because if it was over, we wouldn't be here. And so as we play our part in that bigger picture, in that bigger story, we just ask, Lord, that you would continue to call us into a heart of worship, a heart of sacrifice, a heart of putting you at the center. Thank you, Lord, for all your protection, your provision. Amen.